Welcome to episode 28 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, the world's only hand-free yet haptic podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm Rick.
I'm Brian.
And we're going to bring you a hands-free yet haptic yet touchscreen yet interface heavy episode. I'm confused already. I hope we can muddle our way through this.
As long as it's wireless, we'll get to the end.
What's haptic mean?
I'm not even sure if I used haptic properly in that sentence, but let's roll with it because it sounded nice. Before we jump into our topic, which is man-machine interplace, which, as the name implies, involves men, machines, interfaces, and places, we should interface with our audience on a personal level by telling you what we've been up to during the past week with our weekly Geekly Roundup. Brian, why don't you start us off?
Well, I had a very busy geeky week. I found out that Japan is actually producing mechs.
Mm.
Did anyone know this?
Yes.
Karutas? Or
yeah, they're ones that you can like drive on the street and stuff.
Yeah, and they actually fire like airsoft weapons.
Yeah.
I was not aware of that. I'm pretty excited. I've got a Kickstarter up for my first million right now.
You beat me to it.
I'll share. Don't worry. We can carpool.
For our own Ganzatron. That'd be great.
Oh, that's an awesome name, too.
Listening to Tom's enthusiasm about video gaming has gotten me into my Xbox again.
Yay.
Yes!
Pretty excited about that. Having trouble finding a game that clicked. I've been trying to get back into Skyrim, but having treated it like a role-playing game and not really remember what role I was playing and having no idea how to play my character any longer, it's really not fun. I think I'm just going to start over. New character, new everything, because I remember loving the game.
You getting killed a lot?
Getting killed a lot and just roaming very plain white scenery looking for something. And if I hear one more dragon that I can't find and kill, I'm going to break a disc.
Just use fast travel, man. Spare yourself, because wandering the wilderness, you go off down these like false trails and it can get frustrating.
I had a wonderful moment where I found a dungeon, went in, was very excited to face White, Drugar White.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Barely escaped with my life, was having fun, collected all the treasures, walked outside and died to a spider. Thank God for autosave.
It could be worse. I had my horse attacked by, like, a dragon and a pack of wolves and bandits, like, all at the same time. So, don't feel bad.
I'm usually thrilled when my horse will tank a dragon for me.
You must have tough horses.
Could be. Let's see, what else? Oh, I've been reading manga, whatever,
oh.
Comic books.
Yeah.
My recent experience with Ready Player One kind of getting me into reading things on a cell phone, smartphone, whatever they're called, sparked my interest. And last weekend I went to the anime convention, Chibipa.
Mm.
And saw a lot of books that I was kind of like, wow, it'd be really neat if I could carry them with me everywhere I go and read them at my leisure. I'm just using the Viz app, and they have like 9,000 books that are free, like the first chapter or the first section or whatever is free.
Ah.
So I'm just reading things to see if it sparks my interest.
We shall have to try that. Is that for Android and iPhone?
I don't care at all about iPhone. Sorry.
Welcome to the show.
I'm sure it is.
Some of us might care. Cool. Anything else to report?
To make my nipophile conversion complete, I've been watching a lot of anime too. I did that Crunchyroll free trial for 14 days, I think. What is that? That's a fortnight, isn't it?
I think that sounds like a fortnight.
What the hell is Crunchy Bites? What is it?
Crunchyroll.
It's like Krispy Krauns, but for anime.
It's an anime streaming service. They do a lot of free stuff, but if you do a premium, I think it's $11 a month, they actually stream it live while it comes out in Japan. Huh. And it's got anime and a bunch of, like, samurai soap operas. They're a lot more fun than you'd think.
I have not even given those a chance, but, yeah. So, and you signed up for the free 30 DVDs offer, didn't you?
It was basically free. That's what finally enticed me into it. It was 30 physical DVDs that they shipped to me for like $15, and you get the free 14-day trial. So I was all about that. I'm gonna enjoy my 14 days. I'll very likely stick with the service. I'm not sure I'm gonna pay the full price for it, but I'll very likely be using Crunchyroll to view anime.
Very cool.
So Crunchyroll is the new Columbia House, I take it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, except you don't get sent like stuff you don't want unsolicited, and then billed for it.
It's email now, so it's much easier to destroy.
Anything else, sir, before I throw it over to Ricky?
Throw it over to Ricky.
Over to you, Ricky.
I had a pretty good week. I went to a local convention, like a pop culture, sci-fi, comic book, / anime, / whatever convention. Really small. I think it was the first time they've had it. It's called Florida Geek Fest, and I picked up a couple of cool books there, some graphic novels, some X-Men stuff, and then walked around, took some pictures, hung out. It was pretty good. Wasn't gigantic, but a nice seed planted for things to come. I think next year we're definitely going to have a Nerdstravaganza table there, and maybe do like a live report, maybe do some, you know, like an online stream of the show, do it live, interview some people and stuff. Might be kind of cool. So that was cool to see some local flavor happening. And then I've spent way too many hours playing a game on the Xbox. You guys are going to fucking laugh at me and make fun of me. I love the indie games on Xbox Live Arcade. You guys know this.
Mm-hmm. So I've heard.
So I bought another winner for 80 cents, or, you know, 80 points, so a one American dollar bill. A little gem I like to call Avatar Farm Online.
What?
Is this Farmville?
Oh my god, dude. I never played Farmville, but Kimberly has, and she says that this is pretty much like Farmville, but you just don't have to use real money. Holy shit, dude. I played this thing. Like, we got home from the con. All right, first of all, I played for about 4 hours straight before the con. You know, wanted to leave at like noon to go to the con. I played from like 11 to like 3:30. Got to the con, got home from the con at 7. I looked up at the clock and it was 2:15 in the fucking morning. And I was still playing this stupid-ass game. So, number one, best dollar I ever spent. It's one of these stupid games that you just, like, you buy seeds, you plant them, you buy machines to help your farm work better, and you buy animals that give you gold, and, dude, it's stupid, but so much goddamn fun. And then, other than that, that's been about it, really. I've been too busy with farm work to get anything else done.
Can we look forward to receiving numerous Xbox messages from you asking for radishes or seeds? Or
I don't think they've implemented that component yet, but the online part is because you can have people from your friends list or whatever join in on your farm and help you do your chores and stuff like that. So
I look forward to toiling in the soil with you. I'm sure it's only a matter of time.
Nice.
Well, if that concludes your roundup, sir, I guess I will leap into mine.
Do it.
Well, I attended Chibipaw, an anime festival, where I hung out with Brian. And the following day, attended a small convention called Geek Fest Florida, where I hung out with you, Rick.
I think I saw you there.
Yeah, it was cool. We were there. We were there. So I got to hang out with the other two-thirds of the Nurtravaganza crew just by virtue of going to the same place at the same time as them. Who figured you could do this outside the virtual world? I mean, it's amazing.
I've heard of it. I've heard of it.
Yeah,
very rarely do we experience it, but we've heard of it.
It's like real life or something they call it, like Second Life, but the
IRL.
Like
first,
IRL. We hung out IRL. Oh, it was great. Apart from that, let me see, what else have I been doing? Oh, not much. Got a little video game system known as the Wii U Entertainment System.
Woo!
Yeah. It sort of interrupted my regular game playing because, I was making my way through the Epic Mickey game on the Wii, and now I want to transfer all my data over, so my Wii playing is suspended until I figure out the process for that.
Can you play the Wii games on the new Wii U?
Yes, you can. There is a full backward compatibility, so you can do that. Yep.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which is good because I have a pretty substantial library of unplayed Wii games, which include two Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles games that I found with Brian at the Chibi-Paw anime convention.
Stained Glass Children for the win.
Stained Glass Children, Rick's favorite series. So doing that, doing a bit of gaming, also playing the Xbox a little, playing a little more Halo 4, mainly because I was trying to, well, mainly because my Wii playing was sort of set, at least my playing of Epic Mickey was set aside, and I wanted to see if there was any kind of smart glass interactivity. There is not with that game, but hopefully there's some coming. Apart from that, making a little more progress in Ready Player One, I'm happy to say. I think I'm up to chapter 11 or 12, so my high-fiber diet has definitely paid dividends.
Wow, you caught up to me quick, man.
That book is awesome. Every time I catch myself wanting to sit and read it, I have to pull like a Bastion from NeverEnding, Bastion from NeverEnding Story, and just be like, no, later, save stuff for later. Like he wanted to eat his whole lunch, remember that? That's me. And so that's it, pretty much the Wii U, some smart glass, some gaming, and attending some cons. Pretty fun stuff. By the way, the Wii U is a great system. So far, I'm impressed. It's really neat.
Which version do you have? Do they come in versions?
Yeah, there's a basic version with a smaller internal memory capacity, and comes with no game and doesn't come with all the nice stands for your controller and your system. But I didn't get that. I got the awesome one. It came with all the cool stuff. And it's black instead of white.
Cool.
Cool system. It looked really nice. Very pretty on the screen. The handheld tablet controller is really, really cool. And I think was compelling enough. I know we've sort of discussed this in the past, if not in the podcast, and at least in person. It was compelling enough, I think, that Microsoft made the move they did with Smart Glass, I think, maybe to sort of jump out there and counter it. That's the speculation, I think, sort of in the community at large. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong.
No, I don't think that's wrong either.
Yeah. So I think this sort of concludes my roundup and segues us nicely into tonight's topic. I think we are seeing a new, yet another paradigm shift in gaming interfaces over to tablets or tablet-like devices. As we recall from a previous episode of the Nerdtravaganza podcast, you know, we've had sort of a seismic shift over to motion controls, and now the Earth is a-quaking again, and we're jumping over into this new tablet way of thinking. I'm not going to use the term gimmick because that sounds judgmental, but it's definitely they're pushing the envelope again on interaction, and that has motivated tonight's discussion, which is where we're at with interfaces, where we're going in the near future, and where we think we might end up in the distant future. So with that said, anything to sort of motivate discussion, anything that any comments, questions to about the Wii U, tablet, or smart glass we want to jump into?
I'll reiterate how excited I am about the smart glass, and even though I have no experience with it, by association, probably how excited I would be about a Wii U controller had I won. But it's not there. There's nothing for it yet, but I think it's going to be great in 2-3 years.
I agree with that statement. I think the potential is evident right out of the gate.
I feel exactly like I felt about motion controls. I think it comes across a little gimmicky when you're talking about it. But once you've seen those 2 or 3 killer games and you're just like, wow, how did I live without this?
Yeah.
I think one of the things that that I really like about the idea of the smart glass, and I'm assuming this is going to follow through, I know nothing about the Wii or the Wii U, so please correct me or interrupt if I'm wrong. But I think one of the ideas that's going to that interests me and is going to make this whole dual screen thing become far more than a gimmick and be more of a sustainable, almost expected feature, if you will, is the ability to browse on the tablet-y device, start your apps, throw them over to your console, use your tablet as the input device. All those features, you know, forget the awesomeness of dual screening in the game and all the cool stuff that can bring, but all the uses that it has outside of being a gaming interaction. You know what I mean? Your IMDb information on movies, your sports stats and stuff like that come up when you're using the TV feeds, and just all that stuff is going to become newfangled, next-gen expected features, I think. So I don't see this thing going away anytime quick. I think it's a far cooler and more solid of an idea than motion controls ever could have been, and look how long they've stuck around. So,
yeah, I think you're onto something. I mean, I kind of like the idea of you and I, like, let's say, hanging out on Xbox and me, like, just tossing you something off my tablet by, like, tossing it into my TV. You know what I mean? Just to be very abstract about what we're talking about. I think it's got some pretty cool applications, and maybe there are future couplings that can happen, not in the biblical sense, with motion controls that we don't foresee yet that can make that even cooler. So it can make those even cooler, I should say. So yeah, I think we're like right at the dawn of something probably really cool.
I don't think we even know what it is yet.
Right. Like, who knew when smartphones came out that Angry Birds would follow and change the world? Wait, no. That's a bit of an overstatement. Who knew when smartphones came out that that interaction at a dinner table would cease? There you go. Nobody could foresee that. That sounded negative, but you get my point.
And it's perfectly true.
It is. Well, it saves, like, small talk, because, like, oh, hey, look at this story I found on the internet. It's kind of great. I think we're sort of speculating. We've sort of entered speculative territory about where these interfaces might lead. I wonder, do you guys see them the companies working out ways to more tightly couple these things with motion controls? Or so maybe in a game you have multiple input devices, like maybe you've got a tool belt of gadgets you have to use, like use the motion controller, now switch over to your tablet, you know, now use your controller. Like maybe instead of just sitting there passively with your controller, you know, you're at the helm of some kind of vehicle or you're some kind of a gadget master and you have to pull out your different gadgets for different tasks. Could you see that sort of thing emerging?
I think that'd be awesome. Now let's throw back to episode 4 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast. When, if I had known then what I know now, I wouldn't have been so excited. But let's jump back to a time when Rick was extremely excited about the Kinect and a little game called Steel Battalion.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's jump into that. That enthusiasm.
So with your scenario of mixing the two, here's what I could see happening. In Steel Battalion, you move your hands around to grab different devices, and it does change somewhat on your screen, you know, if you pull down a periscope. But there's other stuff that you don't necessarily, you know, you're interacting with, but it's not there. So what would be cool is if you could, you know, you have your field of vision. Tom, your example of like a vehicle or a control panel or something is really what spawned this to me.
Sure.
So let's say you've got your like your standard game view, but to not interrupt the view, you know, you click something or you grab something that's on the screen using the motion controller, and then that device's interface pops up on your tablet. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
You can maybe set your targeting radar, just kind of like a secondary screen, which I know that they're doing in some of the games, but being accessed without having to look down and touch it, you're actually just on your screen, you know, moving your hands around up in the air in front of the screen to activate the stuff. I think that might be something that would work.
It's not so much including motion controls, but I love the idea of finally getting the HUD off the screen.
Yes, Brian, that's exactly what I was trying to get at. Exactly. But then there is
the mini map on your controller, have your ammo count on your controller, your health. Just
do we have any fears that that may detract from the game, like you're looking away from your game screen down at a secondary screen?
I think
that's not an easy thing to do.
For the one player experience, let's just take a hypothetical game where you've got a tablet interface which has like all your like your HUD and your master controls, and like a some kind of a motion controller which is like a gun or something, and your basic controller which is used to like control some piece of machinery, which again speak generically. If in a one player scenario to switch modes, it would have to be like you'd almost have to be on a script like now switch to HUD mode, now switch to gun mode. But if you were playing multiple, if you were playing a team in a team setting where you had like three friends in a crew, you could play that in real time. One guy monitoring like the, you know, the big picture because he's got the strategic tablet and he's keeping an eye on all your enemies circling in around you. Like, we've got an enemy coming in at 9 o'clock, and you got to then the control guy has to turn the robot around, and the gunner is like firing at it. You know, with this like, you know, like that would be awesome.
Holy shit, that would be badass, man!
Right?
Like three people in like, well, dude, just like Steel Battalion, you've got a crew inside the mech, and everybody's got their own thing. Dude, could you imagine two tablets and the main screen?
Dude,
oh my god!
One guy's like doing like long distance missile warfare with like mechs that are far away. The other guy's like calling in airstrikes. The third guy is like shooting at soldiers that are coming near you. It would be sick.
I don't think I ever convinced either of you to play this game, but this gives me a hope for an amazing sequel to Chrome Hounds.
I didn't have an Xbox, but that was the reason why I was gonna buy an Xbox. And then when I really, you know, the original. And then once I got to that point where I was ready to pop my cherry and get it, they shut the servers down. So then it took like a few more years after that till I actually got one.
It's a shame. Mm-hmm. So
you had classes of mech, and of course you could be the giant, you know, heavily armored, huge weapon mech. You could be the fast, like, Jeep type mech. You could be, and they actually required you in some of the missions, you could be basically the radar scout planner. And you rarely even had a weapon on your mech. All you had was a huge satellite and communications array, and maybe like a machine gun for self-defense. The point of the game wasn't go kill him. The point of the game was protect our flanks, find out where the guy's coming from, relay it to the rest of your team, to the heavy hitters. That would be amazing on a tablet like this.
Yep.
Where yeah, it would.
You're not even really looking at the screen. You're looking at your controller because it has the radar on it, and tapping out your... You could even do the little fling thing, like fling this target to that guy, fling this target to that guy.
Yeah, I think it would be killer. Now that necessitates friends. That's the only downside. Like I think the one player person might be missing out, you know.
Yeah, but there are games that are out there that they throw in some bullshit campaign. I mean, how many times have you heard people say, oh, if you're playing such and such a game for the campaign, you bought the game for the wrong reasons?
Yeah.
So, as much as I have social anxiety, even with people online, so I get where you're coming from. But then again, you know, they may be able to pull it off in a one-player scenario. Maybe you just pick one of the crew members you want to be or something, but you are right. You are right. That would be a stumbling block because they have to take that into consideration. So,
but it's a thought. At least we've got an idea of a cool implementation of the newfangled technology that we are seeing emerge.
Right, and what's cool about it is that it seems like so over the top, but it's really like it's right there. It's standing right behind us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're not like just it. This isn't a 50,000 foot view. You know, this is like a 15 foot view, which is promising and badass. It's just a matter of is someone going to do it.
One hopes. One certainly hopes because it's weird the way things have evolved. If you had asked me in the early 90s where we'd be today, I would assume that we'd all be on like little mini holodecks, that we'd all be in these virtual reality projections, right? Seriously, you know, wearing helmets, I'm not Star Trek quality, but I thought we were going into the direction we were going in was toward just fake environments, right? Where like...
Right, I know what you're saying. Not your actual belief, but yes, that was much like in the 50s, everyone was like, ooh, in the 90s and 2000s, we're going to be in flying cars.
Right.
The focus of everything in the 90s seemed to be polygons and virtual reality. Everything was. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from on that.
And we're currently in a phase where I don't know if virtual reality is something that's been abandoned, but I think we're making concessions. Like, okay, this isn't something that we're going to have in the near future. What else can we do to draw you into the experience? So maybe that was a more succinct way of, you know, saying that these new modes of control, these new interfaces are coming to the fore. Mm-hmm. They're coming to the fore as a concession, as a way of sort of adding to the experience in the absence of fully, you know, immersive to, I'm still not sure if that's a proper word, environments. But I wonder if we're going to go in the direction of virtual reality still. I mean, imagine we already have like augmented reality. So imagine somehow being able to throw on some goggles or glasses or something where your tablet and your motion device now have like your projections hovering above them or something like that. And yet you're surrounded by a virtual environment. Does it make sense? Like, I wonder if we're going to see some kind of a bridge from this into.
Well, all the stuff that we're coming across now spark the next gen of virtual reality, or is virtual reality completely dead?
Right.
Because it seems like it is. But then again, if you really break it down and analyze it, it's kind of like almost everything that we experienced in the 90s was just an experiment, almost like a proof of concept. And then it's like, all right, it can be done. We know the technology isn't here. What was missing? And let's try to develop and make those things better.
Isn't it the rumor that the Xbox 720 actually is going to include like projection capabilities? Like it'll project some of the probably non-playable game on your walls just to immerse you?
That is cool. That's sort of an augment. That's sort of a different take on augmented reality, isn't it?
That's putting you in the game, but it's not exactly changing how you play it or where you play it. It's pure immersion.
Are you talking about like making so it makes like the whole your whole wall is the screen, like
not
like a back projection from your television or something? Or
I my understanding of it was that it was projecting like background, basically nothing playable, not the entire screen, but expanding your vision. Like, oh, I'm staring at this tiny little screen. Now I'm staring at, like, you know, there's trees off to the side of me, and there's...
Yeah, so that's what I'm getting at. Like, it's projecting an extended play area, even if it's just a fake frame, just to kind of give you the idea and feel that that's where you are.
Right.
I like that. I mean, I don't... Yeah, even if it's not perfectly Just having leaves projected, like, or green projected all around me when I'm in a forest would do a lot, I think, you know? Interesting. So that's... Is that a form... So when I'm mentioning augmented reality, I'm talking about you look through your phone and your phone paints a picture there that's not there, right?
Like the Harry Potter book. Have you seen that?
A perfect example, the magic... But what's it called for the PlayStation...
The Harry Potter book. Let's just call it that.
Let's just call it the Harry Potter book. But, yeah, that is something where you're seeing your image on the screen with this augmented reality. You've got the book in front of you, but when you're on the screen, you're seeing a world with magic coming out of the book. It seems like if they're actually talking about projecting things onto your walls, that they're taking it in another direction rather than presenting you an augmented image of the world, they're changing your world.
I feel like that has the hugest potential to fail, though, because you have to have the right lighting, you'll have to have the proper placement. If you're, you know, how many people own a Kinect that don't even have logical space for it to use it properly? You know what I mean? So it kind of, and I'm not trying to shit on it, because it would be cool. But it almost seems like one of those things where it would be such an easy fail that it might not even be worth doing.
It's interesting. I don't know. Brian, what do you think? Is this something like you're going to – it'll only really work if you're going to rearrange your living quarter, your domicile to accommodate it?
I honestly think Rick answered his own question. I would have said the exact same thing about motion controls a couple of years ago.
That's true, and even though some people, myself included, don't have the optimal setup, they persist. They persist.
Right. Same with me. Same with me, man. Whether it's buying a device to stick on the front of your Kinect or rearrange the furniture at game time or a combination of the two, I mean, you make it work.
If it's a compelling enough experience, you'll adapt. You'll change your life to accommodate your entertainment.
Right. And dude, you're 100% right, because when it came to testing Steel Battalion, dude, I didn't give a shit. I was ready to sell my couch. I'm like, I'm doing this. Then after I got involved and realized that it wasn't worth the effort, then it just became a whatever. Over the week or whatever, I wanted to play some Virtual Disney, so of course I had to go through the effort of moving the stuff in my living room, but that game works so well with the Kinect that it's worth doing. So I think that's a really good point. Sometimes it's worth the effort.
Side note,
sometimes it becomes worth the effort too. Like, it doesn't, it grows on you.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, yeah, now that you've been in the Virtual Disney setting, you know it's worth moving your furniture and
exactly.
So on. Side note, though, Rick, if you want to give Steel Battalion another shot, I could sell you in a non-refundable transaction my copy that I was so excited for.
Such a disappointment, man, because there was so much promise. I mean, why do you think – let's just take that for a second. Brian, are you familiar with what Steel Battalion is?
I don't think I am. I thought I was, but
– X Game – or Xbox 360 game that uses Kinect mixed with your standard controller. And basically the idea was you were going to use your standard controller for most of the gameplay, but then for certain interactions you go through and you make different hand gestures and motions, like you reach up and you can pull down a periscope and stuff like that. Basically, rather than having to come up with button combinations, you do hand movements to get access to different things in your mech.
Isn't Steel Battalion the one that had the, like, $2,000 controller for the PlayStation 2?
That was the original.
That was the original. So they're discontinuing their you cannot possibly ever access this game to play it trend?
Pretty much.
Okay.
So, you know, it had all the potential in the world. Like, it seemed like there was enough... I don't know the word to use. It seemed like there was enough motion control interaction without being overboard or confusing. So it was in-depth enough, but pulled back enough. So it seemed like a perfect balance. And somehow, some way, it was a disaster, man. It's it's not even virtually unplayable. It is literally unplayable. Back me up, Tom.
I mean, I hate to say it. I'm usually... I can find the silver lining in, like, any video game gray cloud, which is interesting because I can't seem to find silver linings in a lot of other clouds. But when it comes to games, I'm usually Mr. I can find the good in it. This game is unplayable. And it stands out as an unfortunate example of how you can overreach with these new technologies and be too ambitious and end up just disappointing legions of what would otherwise be slathering, like, you know, fanboys.
And even and that's said with it being perceived as, like, it seemed like a doable level. Like, that was my argument the whole, like, 8 months I was waiting for this game to come out. People are like, dude, it's going to suck. I'm like, I don't think it's going to suck, man, because they're not going crazy with it. It's minimal. It's enough to make it worth doing, but not so much that it's going to screw up the game and make it hard or impossible to do. Do you know what I'm saying? It was that perfect line, and if they couldn't pull it off on that, I'm not going to lie, dude. I kind of lost hope in Kinect after that.
The thing is, I would have settled, though. Like, if they had released it as they did, because there are a lot of buttons and switches and things you can press in the cockpit and a lot of things you have to do that just get confused. The Kinect gets confused. If they had come out and said, man, that's not going to work. Okay, the Kinect interactivity is you reach up when you want to fire your heavy missiles, you reach up and you pull down a periscope to target.
Yep.
No more turning on the fan, no more venting, no more doing a lot of the other things, or patting your crewmates on the back to reassure them. We took all that out.
You're kidding.
That's a real thing. But we took all that out, and you can, when you want to fire your super killer missiles, you pull down this periscope, and then you hit fire on your controller. I would have been like, okay, cool. At least that's a cool Kinect
right
gimmick.
Dude, patch the fucking game so that the most basic, just to include the Kinect, because I'm with you, dude, the binoculars thing, the pull down, you know, the pull down the periscope, certain, maybe even to open it, like, minimize, make it as minimal as possible for the interaction stuff, and then the stuff that was maybe in the long run ended up being superfluous, and you kind of realize, okay, well, this is what's clogging up the game and this isn't what's working. Let's stick with the cool stuff that still does work. Get rid of the little extras that most people aren't going to know about until they actually get into the game anyway.
Yep.
So those are things you're not going to miss or get. You know, maybe you still got to reach for a wrench. Maybe you still got to flick a button here and there, but let's make it more simple, because really when I played the game, it was far more Kinect-y involved than I thought it was going to be.
Yep.
And which is why I kept saying it seemed like the perfect balance. It seemed like the perfect balance because the generic, you know, this is what it's going to do list was perfect. I was like, hell yeah, you're just pulling down this, you're just flicking a thing. And it seemed like it was going to be the best of both worlds. And then, you know, then release date comes and it's like, why did you add all this extra shit that you weren't telling anybody about? Because this is the stuff that's screwing the game up.
Right. I don't need to turn on the fan. While I'm trying to arm my missiles, I don't want to be turning on my headlights.
Right.
I don't want to, like, you know, hit the little hula girl on my dash. No, that's fake, but I'm surprised they didn't add that too.
So. Let me ask you, as someone who's never played this, is it the motion controls limitation, or did they just bork the game?
The motion controls are... they were too ambitious with them, and they're not precise enough to handle the level of ambition.
But it sounds like that's the game's fault.
Well,
it sounds like if this had been like a mech action game instead of a mech simulation, that the motion controls really could have worked out.
Yeah. If they had... Well, boy, I don't know what they could have done to make the game more forgiving to accommodate for Kinect's clunkiness or for their implementation of Kinect's clunkiness.
Yeah, that's how you got to put it. You got to put it as their implementation of the Kinect. So I guess maybe that does answer Brian's question. It's not the Kinect's fault.
It's just too much for the Kinect.
Yeah. I think
so. But who knows? Maybe if somebody else did it with different code, maybe it would be better. I don't know.
Or even toning it down a little bit so that hand controls aren't as similar.
That's really what it is, dude. Yes, that's what it is. It's almost like it's too confusing. Some of the stuff you've got to do is so similar to other stuff. And Tom, I don't remember what it is, but there was this one move you kept having to cross over to do something, and like you just detonate yourself or whatever.
Yeah, there was a self-destruct button like right over near where like the emergency vent fan was and the headlight switch.
So it's really clearly the game's fault.
you can accidentally... So it should be stick your hand up to do something above you, right to do something to the right, left to do something to the left, and that's it. They need to just simplify it to three things.
Yep.
But instead, they've got you reaching across one control surface to get to another, and that screws you up because you end up interacting with something you don't want to interact with. Which... brings me to, this is a nice bridge into the new addition of tablet controls. What if they made Steel Battalion, you know, Heavy Armor 2. whatever, and they were like, okay, we minimized the Kinect controls, they're still there, we moved some stuff onto the controller, and we added some stuff for smart glass. So, like, switching from missiles to guns to different weapon systems is a matter of pulling up your portable instrument and just hitting a button. And all it is a screen with, like, missile... machine gun, you know, flamethrower, and you just like just press the button. There you go. Now
so
you've incorporated the tablet.
So you have the tablet beside you or on your lap or something like that, and almost like when you're doing mouse and keyboard, you've got your hand on one and
or it's just a panel. It just stays up and it's a panel sitting next to you, and all it is buttons you can press.
Right, I'm getting at.
Just switch to missile. Switch to that. That would be cool.
Well, that's just your HUD on the screen, though. That's like your menus and stuff being there, which I like. I'm not saying...
Well, it's a prime example, I think, of sort of how you could... How tablet controls or external handheld device controls could augment or could make up for some of the limitations of motion controls. Because maybe motion controls aren't meant to replace everything unless you're doing, like, you know, jungle jumping jacks or some kind of a, you know, animal exercise game, right?
Yeah, because, dude, the Kinect works. Like, I will still defend it. It does work.
Yeah, yeah.
I have games that I use it on. You know, the Racketeer game, it works. The Disney game, it works. I like the Wii Sports game on the Xbox. Yeah, Xbox Sports. Like, I play darts on mine and stuff. It works.
You just got to use it properly.
Right.
So... It seems like we're all, and we haven't really given a great deal of attention to PlayStation Move, which I understand is the most accurate of the motion control schemes, or the Wii, because I think I'm the only one of us who owns a Wii. So, but Kinect is sort of our common ground here. So
right.
That said, I think we are still optimistic about motion controls going forward. Is that fair to say that we're all...
I'm definitely... I've seen some improvements. I've seen them realize mistakes and make games that work a little bit better. Like Racketeer is a really good example. And as far as complete hands-free, the jury's still out, but I'm hopeful, yes.
Brian, are you...
I'm pretty excited about it. I think, well done, they only add to the game. But I think... our experience is with a lot of crap games that would have been crap even if they didn't have motion controls.
I think you're not wrong. Yeah.
So, all right, so Kinect's out of the way. We can throw that one to the wayside for now.
Okay.
Tablets definitely seem to be the way to go. You've got the Wii U.
And Smart Glass.
I am interested in this one player versus the other three player stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that idea a lot.
Well, that's sort of how Nintendo has positioned the Wii U, because they've said, I think the system can support two tablets just because of, you know, technical
limitations.
Well,
that was an afterthought, too. Hopefully, when it's done right, they'll be able to do four-player.
Right, right. So... But be that, you know, however that ends up developing, the fact of the matter is right now, they're doing a lot of games where you're going to have one guy acting as either the leader or playing a special role or even acting as a foil for the other people who are just using regular Wii controllers to play a certain game.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt real quick because very rarely do I ever have anything positive to say about the Wii. So, I like this because it makes them stand out, which is what they always try to do with their new systems. So that's definitely a check on the plus side. And I also like the fact that it is helping them stick with their whole communal gaming or family gaming or multiplayer gaming situation that they devised when they first came out with the Wii.
Mario Party 37 on the Wii U is going to be awesome.
Right. So, I mean, it's nice to see that they're still continuing with that stuff because I think we discussed in one of the other episodes, like, what are they going to do? How are they going to do it? Well, that's how they're doing it. And I'm impressed by that. It makes me feel like it wasn't just a, hey, let's just throw something out there new, just to throw something out there new. They put some thought into it. They kept some of the history. They're continuing on the path that they started. So, with that being said, go ahead.
Yeah, I think they're it's a new type. It's not one player gaming or two player gaming or four player gaming in the traditional sense. It's like 3+1 player gaming where the plus one has a new whole new role potentially. And I'm glad. Yeah, I have a positive view of it too. I think it could lead to some interesting things. For one thing that comes to mind, one guy, the guy with the tablet, is the dungeon master.
Dude, that's exactly what I was thinking, man.
The other three are trying to make it through his dungeon, and he's dropping monsters on him, and it's great because they're like, oh, come on, you see that bugbear? We can't fight that, and he's laughing, you know? And then maybe he drops him a potion to throw him a bone. You know, that's fun.
My biggest hope is also my biggest complaint with the Nintendo company, and that is I hope that they are traveling down a road that's not just baby games or another billion versions. Include the billions of versions of Mario games, that's fine. But include other stuff for people that's not their thing. Because that's what's been lacking.
Go ahead, Rick,
I was going to say, that's what's been lacking on the handheld as well as the Wii. I mean, that's why I never bought a Wii. I'm just like, baby stuff.
Tom, I'm almost positive Rick never played this game, but I think I subjected you to it a few times. Do you remember the party game Poi Poi?
I do remember Poi Poi. Was it an import or something?
They actually released it here. We played the sequel, which was only an import also, but Rick, it was this game, and it was the stupidest concept, but it was so much fun. It was it's four player, so there's four guys on the screen. You appear in a field on opposite corners, and you pick up shit and beat each other over the head with it. And your character gets special abilities that are, you know, unique to that special character, and then you can actually like choose a glove to purchase, like a magic glove that will make the rock you throw burst into three instead of just throw one, or that makes you stronger so that you can throw larger rocks. And it was the most fun. You get four people to play that, and it was just awesome. The possibilities of having even someone playing that on a Wii U controller, mm-hmm. with his three friends with normal controllers, and being able to manipulate, you know, things in the environment. How many penguins are going to show up to peck you? How fast do the grenades tick down? Maybe they're 5 seconds this match. Maybe they're 10 seconds this match.
Right.
Just all those little hidden things that you can do for an actual, like, sit in your house and play games as opposed to this online multiplayer where you don't have fun with your friends on a Friday night anymore.
Right. Okay, I'm going to throw this into an arena that none of us really ever bothered up. Oh, that was a... And it's a pun, too, and I didn't even realize it. I'm going to throw it into another arena, and that's the sporting games arena.
Yeah.
Think about a baseball game. Oh, what am I going to do? I'm going to put my pitches on my tablet so nobody can see them.
That's
right. Football game, what am I going to do? I'm going to put my plays in on the tablet where nobody can see them.
And that value...
That's huge, dude.
And that, well, yeah. And it's huge in the context of what Brian was just saying, which is we're sitting together, we're in a room, we're right. hanging out as friends, we're not just online. I'm not against online interaction, don't get me wrong, but I think Nintendo have really doubled down on encouraging an in-person game experience.
Dude, we talked about it on the show before. It always won out. Playing in your living room, on the couch, on your console, with your friends, is why we love video games. That's why. That's how it happened. That was the birth of it. And it needs to come back to that. The thing that has always ruined that for me is I hate split screen. I refuse to play it. So you're dealing with double screens or tablet screens, stuff like that. You're bringing it back, dude. You're bringing it new style and old style mashed together.
Oh, agreed.
Awesome.
Dude, what if Nintendo, what if they were like, look, we're also going to create something like Smart Glass. So if the tablet offers one experience, but also on your cellular, on your smartphone, here you've got like another tablet experience. Wow, now they've reached parity again with Smart Glass.
Here's what scares me about that. Why it won't happen.
Oh, it's Nintendo. I know why.
Well, they can make a shit ton of money by selling more of those tablets and having them connect a lot more than they can just making an app to give away.
But that might actually compensate for the problem they're having, because right now I think the Wii U can seriously only handle two controllers.
Correct.
Well, two of the fancy controllers. So the other two people could just use their phones.
Right. And it's a twofold problem. One, that the system can only handle the load of two of those controllers. Right. And two, those things are... They don't sell the controller separately yet, but they're alleged to cost somewhere. It's rumored that they're going to cost close to the price of a system alone. So that's an expensive proposition for a family, you know?
Right.
So it's a thought. I don't know, just throwing it out there. I'm not saying Nintendo will do it, but that would be pretty cool.
I mean, it kind of would be cool if they did do it, because there is still going to be a lack of... Okay, that controller has buttons and stuff on it.
I was just going to say, make the point I think you're about to make, Rick, which is that just giving you a Smart Glass-like experience won't sort of cannibalize their tablet sales, because
exactly.
you won't have the full exactly. suite of controls. Right.
And I hate doing stuff. I don't like, and this can kind of bring us segue into the next thing we were going to talk about, which is haptic feedback. I don't like not having tactile or... I need buttons, dude. I there's so many games that I play on my tablet that I'm like, dude, if I could just play this game on a non-touch screen, I would love it. But I don't like the no-feel zone. So I think you're right. Like, I would, you know, maybe get an extra tablet so that me and my girlfriend both have one in the house. You know, a tablet controller. But if other people come over, maybe they can bring their own. If they don't have one, hey, download the app. It's free.
Yeah. Yeah.
If anything, it would probably prompt you to like, oh, I hate playing without the buttons. I want the good controller.
Right.
Oh, forget it. I'm just going to go buy one. You know what I mean? It might even be a positive.
Yeah. I mean, because it's like a bridge.
Right.
It's a bridge that sells you the controller. And you know...
Hey, dude, just like with all dealers, the first one's free.
First one's included in the outrageous price of the...
Well, forget...
Yeah, it's free.
Don't forget also that the Wii is compatible with standard Wii controllers, so maybe there'd be some kind of a gimmicky way to use a standard Wii controller with a smartphone or a tablet for sort of a poor man's Wii tablet, you know? I'm sure at a certain point they would be cannibalizing those tablet controllers, so I guess it would be a matter of demand for the game experience exceeding their desire to sell those controllers, right?
Yeah.
But cool thought. So you mentioned the haptic feedback and feedback in general and like the tactile experience of buttons in a controller, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
With tablets... Speaking specifically of Smart Glass, and assuming that's the way to go, You don't have it. I mean, the Android, the one thing a lot of Android phones at least have, and I assume tablets do, is they have a haptic feedback feature, which I actually like. I just like the vibration when I touch things.
Right. And I don't have that on my tablet. The haptic feedback's definitely better, but really what I was missing the mark on was I like the tactile feedback of a button. Is really okay. What I like.
Okay. It's irreplaceable. I mean, you can't. I don't care how nice your on-screen interface is. Like, I don't necessarily miss the tactile feedback of a dial pad on a phone, right?
Right.
But on a game, I like a controller in my hand.
You know what I think it has to do with any? I do love on like the phone when you tap something, it gives you that little bump. You know, the little vibration of
yes.
feedback, the haptic feedback. So if people don't know what we're talking about, that's what we're talking about. And that's awesome if you just need one thing. But I was playing this game. I can't remember the name of it, which sucks because I wanted to tell you guys about it. It's like a throwback to like a Nintendo game, an NES Bionic Commando style, Contra style game. And it's awesome. The graphics, the music, everything is spot on, authentic. And I try to play it, and it, of course it's got the HUD display, A, B button, and then a left and right arrow. The thing is, you can't feel where you are. You know what I mean? There's that on a gamepad, it's not necessarily that you have a button to press. It's the fact that you have your control area that you don't need to look at. You could feel it with your thumb. That's my button for that. That's my button for this. This is my button for this. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
It's like that is the tactile feel, but it's almost like a topographical map. You know what I mean? Like, you feel where you are. It's not necessarily the feeling of pressing the button. It's having the button, being able to feel the button to define your zone.
It's a landmark.
Yes, landmark. Perfect. So it's your controller landmark. And without having that type of thing on the tablet or on the phone, I have a hard time playing a lot of these games because you're looking at other stuff on the screen and you don't have your buttons to feel to know where you're at.
Well, that's why smart glass is ill suited as a controller, right? Jeez, there's a technology maybe yet to be invented that would allow a zone of a flat screen to have a distinct tactile feeling when you pressed on it. That would be, who knows what kind of cancer causing like.
It's like genius glass.
No, here's what it is: gamer skins. And
you get
them, and they have like they're roughed up or textured for the different games you play. But that harkens back to the old days of, you know, ColecoVision overlays and
for your number pad.
Intellivision overlays. Yeah, for your number pads. But think about it, dude. Like a clear overlay that you put on your screen, like a screen protector that has, you know, your built-in textured areas for the games that you play.
It could work better than my idea, where I assume there'd be some kind of electrochemical, hence cancer-causing, you know, something interacting with your skin.
Oh yeah, well that would definitely be better.
Yeah, until your fingers.
Until the cancer sets in.
Yeah, your finger. You'd have thumb cancer, which had never been heard of in human history until now. But it would be cool. But that between that and the, you know, eye cancer you're going to get from interacting with these new projected virtual environments, you're just going to die anyway. What's the problem? So to continue on the theme of tactile sensation and achieved through haptic feedback, how do you write? Wouldn't it be cool to have a Kinect where you were feeling something when you touched something to tell you when to stop pushing, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
It's one of the hardest things about playing the game. And this is funny because this also harkens back, and I keep saying that stupid word. This also goes back to episode 4 when I gave a lot of shit to the Wii nunchuck or whatever it is and the Move. And then, you know, I started getting into a lot more Kinect play. That sounds porny. So I started getting into a lot more Kinect play and realized the thing that I don't like about it is the same thing I bitched about all the other things having. And that's something in my hand. Dude, it feels weird to do, like, nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you're just kind of like, you're playing, it's like rock, paper, scissors, like, expanded to everything.
Yeah, there's nothing there, and it's awkward, and it feels weird. Maybe for, like, you know, like, throwing a dart or making a move, I don't know, but I do like that you can't really cheat on it like you can with the other games, with the other, you know, because you can't just sit and wave it around, you've got to do stuff, but there is something missing, and I find myself picking up objects and, you know, to get the weight or the feel in my hand. So,
wouldn't it be cool if there, I mean, we're probably a long time away from being able to get weight, but wouldn't it be cool if you could pick up an object and feel some kind of a texture in your hand, you know? What I'm really trying to do is allude to the Ready Player One book we're all reading, where
yeah,
the action takes place in a virtual world wherein where the players have what are called haptic feedback gloves, which let them touch things.
And they're still doing it in midair, obviously, but the gloves have sensors in them that would give, you know, pressure points or feedback or weight and stuff like that. So
I think that's one of the coolest takeaways. Well, there's a bunch of cool takeaways from that book, but in terms of the environment in which the game plays out, it's the fact that they've gone full virtual reality, but with touch. Like, there's that sensation of touch. Like, I wonder if we'll see that in Kinect/Move/Wii 3.0, or if it'll be a late, you know, introduction in 2.0. I don't know how expensive that technology would be to implement, even, you know, in a glove, in a wearable form.
I don't know, man. We've only ever seen really one glove on the market, and that thing was a flop, so...
It was so bad, and not in the way they meant to say it was so bad in The Wizard.
I don't know, man. I think it would be... it could easily be done. I mean, we could probably make one over at the Makerspace, in the sense of, you know, you're wearing a glove, and you could, based on sensors and whatever, it would, you know, fill up an air chamber to make the glove tight. I mean, there's things you could do. It's just a matter of being able to do them affordably and or safely for mass marketing. But for, like, homebrew Frankensteining, I mean, we could do all kinds of shit. That's one of the things that's awesome about the Kinect. It's so hackable, man. You just plug it into your PC and go to town, and you can have it doing all kinds of stupid shit.
So we can make Kinaptic feedback.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good name, dude. We gotta take care of that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody better steal that. That's copyright us. We've advanced down the road into sort of the near future, and I was wondering where you think interfaces and really environments in which interfaces and or environments are going or will go in the distant future. And I figured we could take inspiration from sort of three main threads of sci-fi, if that's okay with you guys. Those being the three that we had sort of discussed prior to the show were the sort of the holodeck projection with voice interaction, right, of Star Trek, which I find to be super far flung, because that's going to involve a computer so smart that it doesn't just parse what you're saying, it understands and thinks, right? But voice controls, let's just say, which the Kinect actually does now have,
mm-hmm.
Are we going to go more down the road of sort of voice and very simple, you know, touchscreen interfaces like you would see on the deck of the Enterprise, but mainly voice, you know, voice interaction being the way to go, because we are a verbal species? Or would we go more down the line of what you saw, if you guys remember the movie Minority Report, which was sort of I guess you'd call an augmented reality or a projection into reality of these interfaces? Because as I recall, I don't remember him wearing glasses. I think he was just interacting with these sort of floating polygons or objects, but he had haptic feedback gloves on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you had the haptic sensation interacting with things that weren't there, but that were projected into the real world, right? I wish I had done my research to remember if Tom Cruise was wearing special glasses in that movie.
I thought he was wearing gloves, some kind of gloves.
Gloves for sure. I don't think he had glasses.
Okay, so there you had a projection of things that weren't there into the real environment, which you could manipulate with gloves as though they were, right? So, you know, if you didn't have the gloves on, they might as well have just been pictures for you, right? So there was that second approach of sort of super augmented reality. And then a third approach, which I know we're all intimately familiar with because we're all reading or have read recently the Ready Player One, which is the dream of the 90s, full-on virtual reality. You're putting on a visor, and in you go, and you live there. But with the added bonus that I mentioned before of the haptic feedback sensation, you know, of being able to feel. I don't know if you want to say where you think we'll go or where you'd prefer to go, but pick one, two, or all three of those if you guys want, and speculate as to whether we'll get there or you'd want to get there.
I would like to point out, it's very early, but the Minority Report thing kind of exists. They have those little cubes that project like a laser grid for a keyboard, and you can actually just type on whatever.
Yep.
I mean, you can project it on your desk, and you know, when you press the buttons, it really presses the buttons.
I've seen those. Yeah, I've seen those. So that's,
we're kind of there. I mean,
dude, you figure between, you know, the touchscreen tablets and stuff like that, that's kind of there. The laser type of thing, the proximity sensors that Brian was just mentioning, that's already there. I mean, that Minority Report thing already pretty much exists in bits and pieces. It's just hasn't been mashed together as this end-all, be-all, send it out there to the masses type thing yet.
So I'd like to ask you to pare back your idea of what a holodeck could be, because we have the image from Star Trek that it's completely immersive. You can do anything in your imagination. But as a stepping stone, I think with technology like Siri, you could program games currently where you could react with your voice. You know, you could say the line of text, and Siri would be able to, Siri Deck would be able to pick it up and respond to you.
So yeah, putting aside the ability to just manipulate matter directly and light into whatever we want, which is way out in the future, you're saying we could have a, hey computer, give me a Tommy gun in my hand, and suddenly you're holding a Tommy gun and you're like gunning down Bugsy and the gangsters in your simulation, right? But it wouldn't be real. Like the computer could, if that was in the computer's library of polygons, you're saying it could do that for you, or?
I'm saying you could probably just reimagine what it would be. You could walk into the simulation with a controller, you know, with a airsoft Tommy gun.
Okay.
But you could still interact with the projections on the four walls that change as you walk this way or that way. And when a character in the game, when you interacted with them and someone said, oh, you know, why are you here? The game could probably pick up, I'm here to purchase armor.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm here to, you know, get revenge for Tommy.
So we could have a 21st century holodeck potentially.
I think we're a lot closer to having something like that than we might think.
Okay. And you're envisioning that without a virtual reality goggle, like you could enter a room where it was projected into the room?
Or, you know what, maybe, I mean, this would be insanely expensive, but maybe it's four very large computer screens.
That would be cool. There you go. So that's interesting.
That's a throwback. That's a throwback to like hard driving. Remember, you had the screen in the front and then the big screens on the side.
Hard driving was cool. Okay, so that's the... So we see both of those possibilities, and we see those as possible in the near future. And the virtual reality thing, I think I started earlier in the episode, I sort of prefaced things by saying, you know, virtual reality has sort of been put on the back burner. Do you guys concur, or do you think that, you know, we could see that in the near future make a comeback?
I'm sticking with my statement of... I think they kind of realized that a lot of it, to move any more forward than they were when it kind of just disappeared off the face of the earth, at least in the public eye, I think they realized that was based on technology, and had to wait for better chips, better graphics, faster computers, etc. And in the meantime, kind of just looked at everything and said, okay, what can we do to make this situation better? What is it lacking now? And that's where you come up with the voice recognition stuff we have now, the hands-free, or, you know, everything has a gyroscope in it now, or an accelerometer. I think all those things are all those kind of just came out of nowhere, man. They just got pushed to the forefront of public eye, and I they were all things that were missing from back when we loved virtual reality. So maybe that's what spawned it. And then maybe the next step is take everything we've grown accustomed to now. Everybody knows how to shake their phone or tilt their tablet or whatever. Everybody knows how to use the touchscreen. Everybody's used – we're getting – it's almost like we're being baby-fed or baby steps into this next generation. And maybe that's going to be we start seeing the helmets again. And maybe, you know, first step of that is – okay, you're used to touching stuff now without getting any tactile feedback. You're used to this, you're used to that, you're used to twisting, you're used to turning, you're used to having no controls, you're used to having wireless. Now, let's take your eyeballs out of the equation and start using them as computer monitors.
Nice.
Maybe that's where it's going. Maybe the helmets are making their way back, dude.
So
it would make sense, right?
It would, and that's a different way of looking at it.
Spoon-fed, that's what I was. We're being spoon-fed.
We are.
Individual pieces of technology that will make, like, if you just jump in with straight immersion, you're like, oh, well, I'm used to having something in my hand. This feels weird. I'm used to, you know, having to touch stuff. This feels weird. If they take that this feels weird part out of the equation, you could throw any stupid ass, you could throw an 8-bit helmet on us, and we're going to be like, this is badass!
I have a story. I don't think Tom ever got to do this, but Rick, did you ever get to play when VR was like the thing? Did you ever get to play the BattleTech simulator?
No, I never got to play that.
You're familiar with it?
Yeah.
I remember this.
They had one at Grand Prix Racerama.
They had one at, what was it called? The mall in Miami, Dolphin Mall.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
They had one there, too.
Mall of Americas.
Possibly.
No? Dolphin Mall, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
It had, I think it was a 166 processor on it, because you could actually see the machine laying next to the... It was such a piece of crap machine. It was so ancient. But they put you in this. It was an arcade cabinet, but it closed down completely over you, and it had screens all over, and it had like five different controllers in it. It was the most realistic, most amazing thing. I played the game and I lasted about 30 seconds because I forgot to fucking play the game. I was just like, holy shit. I can do anything.
That's how they made their money at $10 a pop.
Yeah.
Because the first five times you're in there, you're just looking around in utter amazement.
Something like that now, where you don't go the whole nine yards, but you have the cabinet, you have the screens with the real graphics, and dude, I would do any mech game, any flying game, any racing game. Think of all of the things that you could do. How badass would a mech first-person shooter in one of those be?
It would be beyond badass. I would live. I would just buy it. It would be. Like, I would own a timeshare in it. I wouldn't just pay to play it.
Just as a point out, those guys, the company that was doing those machines, Brian. I think there was like 15 of them, maybe in existence. I could totally be wrong on that. It was a very small number. But there's a group that purchased all of those machines. They network them together, and they do, like, battles.
Oh,
so
God.
They have them all in one place, linked up together, and have full-blown mech battles. We'll put show notes to that. I've seen videos of it, and they have a website up. You know, they have, like, their whole like the 501st, you know, Star Wars guys.
Right.
They have a thing like that where it's not a league, but they're like a troop or whatever, a squad or whatever you want to call it. So yeah, we'll post that in the show notes.
It was an amazing experience. I loved it. And we could do it. I don't know why that went away. Yeah, it was a little expensive, but
yeah, but today's standards, what you'd be able to do for, you know, the price of what they spent back then, could you imagine if you spent that price now, what you could do with that? Would be amazing.
Agreed.
So yeah, there's no excuse. There's no excuse.
None. None whatsoever. I agree with you guys. So it sounds like, Rick, you were saying the things that I was calling concessions to the sort of impracticality, concessions in the face of the impracticality of virtual reality in the 90s might actually turn out to be the things that facilitate a return to virtual reality.
Yes.
And Brian, you're sort of backing him up saying, look what we could do back then with the Stone Age tools that were available. Think of what we could do now. I think the future is looking bright here.
I think the notion of, you know, when are we going to have a holodeck where I can go and, you know, have sex with a Romulan girl, and it's going to be perfectly 100% real, that's far away. But just looking at what could happen before then, I think amazing things could happen before then.
Okay, so we seem to have identified some things that could potentially come to the fore within our lifetime. I guess, do you see a dedicated place, a destination experience coming, like arcades used to be, coming back? Or do you see us moving more towards better home tech?
I would say probably more to home tech because, you know, that's really where the money is. You can sell more units at $500 to $1,000 a pop than you can hundreds of thousands of dollars to set up a place and then have to charge people to come in. It's just generally environment has shifted to, well, let's make it work at home. Let's make it work on, you know, the consumer electronics have grown leaps and bounds from back in the day where people, you had to go places for stuff because you couldn't afford it. Now the technology is so cheap, it's like, screw making a big place and paying rent on a lease and insurance and everything else. Let's just make something. We can get 5 billion gamer kids and their parents to buy it, and we're done with it.
I would love to see a destination.
I would, too. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I think arcades are dead for a reason.
Exactly. Brian, that's exactly what I was thinking when I was going along those lines, where it's already shifted, and it has shifted so long ago, I don't ever see it coming back. Do I see it being used in badass places like amusement parks and stuff like that? Hell yeah.
Maybe a really ballsy company will do a holodeck experience.
Yeah, like when they have Google Land, when that opens.
Right. And that might catch on enough, but it would be a huge shift. I'm not expecting that.
Yeah, I think you guys are right. My preference would be more towards destination. Well, my preference would be both. But for the destination thing to work, you'd have to... Arcades died because they ceased to be able to provide an experience you couldn't get at home. I think we've discussed this in a previous Nerd Extravaganza episode.
Mm-hmm.
But given the right set of technology and an experience so engrossing and so attractive, you could lure people out of their homes. Like, if there was some technological breakthrough that could only be presented in a public setting.
I think things are just so changed. People won't even be trying to develop that. People will be trying to develop something for the home.
Right.
Maybe. I mean, you know what? As things are now with incremental progress, that makes total sense. But it could be that some guy makes a prototype that just doesn't scale down to the home for any kind of practical, you know, for any kind of, at any kind of a price point that people could afford. So you get a little sweet spot there where, look, man, if you want to experience this like virtual reality, you know, land of Middle Earth, you're gonna have to go to the arcade, man. That's my hope, because that would mean we achieve like a huge breakthrough or a series of breakthroughs of some sort. But
And you know what? I hope that that's the way it goes too, because most likely it'll end up at Epcot, and that'd be awesome if it was at if it was at Epcot Center. And you know, dude, that really does kind of fit in with the whole idea of the virtual reality versions of Horizon, like Horizon's Resurrected, where this guy is building a virtual version of the old Horizons ride, and on the 30th anniversary at Epcot Center, he was set up in the Contemporary, and you could go and you threw on the gear and you got to go through Horizons.
Wow.
It's actually online. You can watch it and stuff. We can post it in the show notes. But apparently, and I don't know, I could be speaking not 100% correct here, but word through the grapevine via the blogs seems to be that he was approached by Disney and they were really interested, and there was Imagineers there looking at how he did it and what he was doing and apparently want to work with him. So we may see some virtual reality resurrections of old attractions that are no longer with us, and that would be really badass, because that's some next-gen theme park shit I would love to be.
That'd be pretty amazing.
Wow, theme parks as the showcase. Theme parks, such as Epcot, just to shoot from the hip, being the a place to showcase new technologies, it blows my mind. I love it.
And exploiting those new technologies by giving life to things that no longer live there anymore.
Amazing.
You know, like, I mean, you miss 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea over in Fantasyland? Well, guess what? That's one of your destinations you can choose on the new VR ride at Epcot Center. Oh, you want to go on Horizons? Sure, no problem. Oh, you want to go on that old Body Wars ride? That's cool. Oh, you want to, I don't know. What else could we do? Mr. Toad's Wild Ride? Anything. Anything that used to live that doesn't anymore. Re-experience it. I mean, dude, it would be cool if they did that at Disney Quest. You know? Everything that you can do at Disney Quest, I mean, they had crazy cool VR stuff and, you know, all the motion stuff back in the day, but now pretty much everything you were able to do there that was like insane 50,000 foot view technology, you actually get as the throwaway game Kinect Adventures. It's sad but true, man.
Yeah, but you experienced there first, you know?
And yeah. Right. So, but that's what I'm saying. So, as much as I was shitting on the destination idea, in the right hands with the right properties, you know, it could be a winner. It could be the door that opens it up to getting the interest to figure out how to scale it down for home use.
Yeah.
What I like most about that is it's like half a step away from being able to do things that were never there.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. If you're already bringing these virtual rides back, why not just make new virtual rides? Oh, you want to ride a speeder bike through the Forest of Endor? Okay, let's do that for you.
But you know, dude, I mean, I hate to say it, but there's tech at Disney that's already like that. Like, if you go on the what the hell is it called? It's at Pixar Place at MGM Studios. Yes, that's what I call it.
The Toy Story ride, dude.
It's all videos. Like, there's, you're riding on these carts. You know, you got your ride system or whatever. But the stuff you're shooting at is just screens. They could easily change it out to make it a completely different ride, or a completely different view of the ride that you're on. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just like you make new graphics, put them up on the screens. It's one of the things that I think is a neat idea, but I also don't like. I'm not a huge fan of a place that can do theming so well and can do the real life things so well. To see it getting switched over to video stuff bugs me in a way, but it's also exciting because it could lead to some of these giant rooms like we're talking about. They're all pathways.
Reusable rooms, and there's got to be some way to reuse to give you the sense of physical scale and sensation, but make it versatile to the point where the ride can be a different experience every time.
Right.
And if anybody can do that, the geniuses that run the theme parks that are conveniently located to us here in Florida are the people.
I was having a hard time making my point because I don't want to dwell on the Disney thing because, you know me, if I could turn this into a Disney podcast, I would. But, you know, you guys are going to experience this weekend. That's right. We're all going on a Nerdstravaganza trip to Epcot Center and Magic Kingdom and anywhere and everywhere else in the wonderful world of Disney. Tom, you're going to experience some of this projection stuff you're talking about firsthand when we see the new Castle show, where they project video onto the castle, and it actually looked, I mean, they changed the shape of it. It's freaking cool.
We can
post a link in the show notes so other people that don't get the experience don't have the experience to watch it in real life can figure out what I'm talking about. But they project these movie scenes and drawings and all different kinds of stuff over the castle. And, you know, it's basically using the environment as the projection canvas. And they're able to manipulate it in a believable way. And it's really cool. And it kind of ties into your, you know, projecting stuff in your living room to, you know, you're walking through the forest. Boom. Now you're really in the forest because your walls are dictating that.
So they are augmenting reality.
Yes.
As it were.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Not in the sense that, you know, the technical air quotes that most people would know it as, but basically achieving the same thing. Yeah.
Right. That's what I was trying to get that across. Not augmented reality in that you're looking through a lens that's showing you stuff that's not there, but it's a different sort of a different take on that. You know, it's observable to all viewers.
Right.
You know, it's let's call it objective augmented reality instead of subjective, meaning where you would have to be looking through a certain rose-colored lens, as it were, right?
Right.
Cool, man. I'm looking forward to this. I think that this is going to segue nicely into our field trip. This is all building up to the field trip.
We're also going to be able to report on the hands-free controlling of fighting in our Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom game.
Indeed we are. Indeed we are.
So yeah,
Disney, where the Nerdstravaganza crew goes for augmented reality. Ooh, that's our new. That's their new. They could use that as an ad campaign. Maybe people go to their parks.
Get at least three more people to go.
They need all the folks they can get. Let's face it, they're barely scraping by without us. With that said, I think we've virtually killed this topic. Ooh,
good one.
We've beaten it up pretty well. I think we've attacked this from several different angles, and it's been this has been a great combo. You guys have anything else you want to add regarding the topic?
No, I'm good. I think I covered it.
Well, I guess that wraps up tonight's topic. Since we are not yet in the brave new world of future interfaces and virtual places, you can pop over to the places we currently have, such as iTunes. There you can, using haptic feedback gloves if you have them, give us a 5 out of 5 star rating and leave us a positive glowing comment/review. We would welcome that.
And if you don't like the iTunes, you can hop on over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, where you can download the show, stream the show, rate the show, leave us some comments, or you can just simply send us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And don't forget to check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/nerdstravaganza.
And so, as it always must, the artificial sun sets on the virtual world of the Nerdstravaganza podcast. We'll see you next week.
What the fuck does haptic mean?